Today, we're going to be talking about reading and awards lists so that you can put those into your comprehensive homeschool records and give colleges the information that they need. And of course, the purpose of the list is to give colleges what they need. Colleges want to see passion in your child. They want to know that there have been interests that your children have had that have lasted for all 4 years of high school or more, or something that they're truly committed to. Because a commitment to an activity over the 4 years of high school can actually predict success in college. Because you know, the child has stuck with it for 4 years, that indicates that they'll be able to stick with it for college for 4 years. Another purpose of having these lists is to fill in gaps, because not everything can be reduced to grades and credits, and some things are just defy being put into boxes like grades, credits, and course titles, and so it can fill that information. It also provides a three-dimensional demonstration of your child. One of the things I talk a lot about is that colleges do not want cookie cutter kids. They don't want kids that look like all the other kids. Instead, they want somebody that looks unusual and different. And one of the ways that you can do that is with your activity and awards list. You know, it's interesting. Just today, I was talking to a mom about her activity and awards list, and she was very concerned because each activity that her child had was only 1 year long, even though her child was a senior. Each activity was only 1 year long, and so we were talking about why that was. Well, it was because she's military, and they had moved 4 times in the 4 years of high school. And so we talked about how, you know, she was a little upset. She was thinking, oh, this is a weak area of their application. And, you know, it might be a weak area of your application if you hadn't moved, but you can actually tie a pretty bow around that and make it seem like it's the best possible thing that a child could ever have. And the best news ever, because this child had lots of experience in moving and living in a new city, and that's what going to college is all about. So for her, we talked about how do you make a list of activities that just had, you know, 1 year at a time of each thing, and it wasn't demonstrating that they had interest for all 4 years, but how do you make that look like a good thing within the context of your activity and awards list? So let's start. You know, we have the reading list and the activity list, and we have to kind of start somewhere. So I thought I'd start with the reading list because it's a little bit more of a concrete topic. You know, you have your author and title, right? It's not really hard. So let's do that one first. The reading list is a list, it's not a bibliography. And that means that you only need the author and title. You don't need to include the edition number and the pages and the editor and the publisher and all that stuff that you might use if you were, you know, giving a citation. This is really just author and title because it's a list. And if you could just be consistent on which one you put first, either always the author first or always the title first, then that will help you if you have consistency, because then you can alphabetize your list. And once you alphabetize it, that will eliminate any duplications that you may have, and that can help you in the long run to make it look more professional. Now, the other thing about reading lists is you want to include all of your reading. And of course, that's where the rub is, because you know, all reading can mean different things to different people. So let's go over that for a minute. When you talk about your reading list, I'm well aware that there are some kids for whom reading 6 books in a year is going to be a great, great accomplishment. And there's other kids that might read 600 books a year, right? So your reading list can be somewhere in between. If sometimes it's a good idea to have one list per year. Other times, it's a good idea to have one list for all of high school. Maybe if you only read 6 books a year, it's better to have all 4 years on one piece of paper. And if you read 660 books a year, then maybe it's better to have one list per year. But your reading list is not tied to any literary analysis. The reading list is sometimes requested from public and private school kids too, and it's meant to include books that they read at home. And generally speaking, they don't do literary analysis when they're reading books at home. So that's not something that you take into consideration within your reading list. When you think about what books to include, you can include all of the books that you require them to read for school. So go over your curriculum lists and see, you know, you might be including books like The Red Badge of Courage. You require that for your homeschool and you put it on your reading list. Some parents will even include textbooks. That's an option. I decided not to do that because my kids are prolific readers. It is okay to include just excerpts of books. One of the numbers that I read about with certified teachers is that if they have completed 75% of a curriculum or more, then they consider it done. So if your excerpt of a book is 75% or more, you probably don't need to say anything other than the title and the author of the book. But it's also okay to say excerpt. So if you read three chapters of The Red Badge of Courage, you could say Red Badge of Courage excerpts if you like. Once you've listed that in your reading list, you can also put those books into the course descriptions. So if you have an English class, the book you use for English might be The Red Badge of Courage. You'd include it on your reading list, and then you'd also put it on your course description. You can also include any books of faith. So if you have a Bible or devotionals or any books like that, you can include those kinds of books. You can include books that they read for fun. My child read a lot of chess books, and by that I mean 30 chess books. You can include popular literature, maybe Harry Potter or Twilight or Marley and Me, or just something in popular literature that they enjoy reading. I have heard colleges complain to me from time to time that this is going to sound really funny, but that they worry about homeschoolers reading only the great books. Now, to us, that sounds hilarious, but to them, they just want to make sure that we let them read more popular literature so that they can experience the current culture and that sort of thing. So it's okay for you to include, you know, books from the New York Times bestseller list or whatever you want your children to read or allow your children to read. You can include that in your reading list as well. You can also include any specialization reading. So my electrical engineer, you know, he might like to read PC World, and my economist student would like to read about Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And those were just fluff pieces. They weren't required by school. We certainly didn't do any literary analysis, but it was something that they read, and so it was something that we included on the reading list. You can also include audiobooks. Just make sure you say audiobook next to the title. That can really help if you have a struggling reader. You can broaden out the books that they experience by doing them in audiobook format. You can include books that you have read aloud to them. Again, that can help with struggling readers. That's something that I did with my own children. Even though I happen to have kids that read tons and tons and tons, we did read alouds all the way through high school until we stopped homeschooling. And so you do include the read aloud books. You can include magazine subscriptions, and again, you can include the great books, the living books, and even the stupid books, because variety is good when it comes to the reading list. Now, what do you do if you have a prolific reader? I have two prolific readers, and so here's some of the things that I did. One thing is that I put each book list by year because it got so unwieldy for them to have so many books that I just would stop and start my lists in June each year. And in June, I'd kind of wrap it up. And starting the next day, I would start a new list because they were reading year round and I could hardly keep up with it. When you have a prolific reader, remember that you want to just record however many books that you can, because you are going to be losing some books because prolific readers will read when you're not even looking at them. Okay. One of the ways that you can record the books that you can possibly record is to keep all of your library lists and receipts. Many library systems, when you check out a book, will give you the name of the book on the receipt that they hand you, and you can use that to help you remember your reading list. Even if you can just have your children, each time they come home from the library, to put that reading list in a particular place or put it with their homeschool records so that you can go back later. Again, it's not tied to literary analysis at all. With prolific readers, you might want to strive for every month or every quarter, you try to compile what they have read. And for me, what that looked like was I told my Kevin and Alex, I said, okay, I need to work on your reading list. Go bring me every book that you have read for the last 3 months. And that's what it looked like in our home. Now, it'd be really nice to say that I had trained my children to keep their own reading list. And as much as I tried to do that, I was never really successful. And they loved reading. They just didn't so much like typing in the lists. And so I finally decided that it was better that I did it than it didn't get done. And so every probably 2 or 3 months, I would say, bring me every book that you've read in the last few months, and I would type it in, which is one of the reasons why I came up with that whole alphabetizing idea, because I couldn't quite tell where I'd left off. And sometimes they would bring me their book, oh, 2 or 3 times, if they were reading the book 2 or 3 times. It's not necessary to record everything. What you're trying to do, though, is demonstrate a breadth of reading, because you're trying to give them the impression of a well-read, voracious reader. Of course, there's other kids in the world that are more reluctant readers. And for them, you might end up having one reading list that encompasses all of their high school. That's probably more common for public school kids anyway. So it isn't looked upon any differently than anything else. You do want to begin keeping a reading list in freshman year, though, because when you don't have many books, it's important to make sure you keep all that you can. Also, when you begin that in freshman year, that can help you to identify the problem. If your reading list is only, 4 or 5 or 6 books, then you'll be able to say to your child, hey, 6 books isn't enough for me. What are we going to do to make it better? And brainstorm together. Remember, though, when you have a reluctant reader, again, that it's not tied to literary analysis. With reluctant readers, you can encourage reading in a variety of different ways. One of the things that I've talked to my Gold Care members about before is to utilize technology to encourage reading. You can have them use audiobooks during activity using MP3 or any downloadable format. You can purchase a Kindle or an iPad e-reader, and the Nintendo DS can be used as an e-reader as well. And sometimes the use of technology will encourage kids that love technology more than they dislike reading. You can also encourage a reluctant reader by focusing in on their specialization area. So if they're really big into popular mechanics, it's okay to write down popular mechanics on their reading list. You can either say it's a subscription, or you can list each individual publication that they get. If you have a reluctant reader, one of the things you can do to get them to read more or enjoy it more is to try to find high-quality literature that is slightly below their grade or reading level. Maybe if this is a book that's normally read during 12th grade, you might want to skip it, but you could get one of those great books from reading lists from the College Bound that is normally read during 7th, 8th, or 9th grade. Right? And they'll find it more enjoyable if it's slightly below their reading level. You can also focus on reading in the summer and just say, well, I understand that 6 books during the school year is all that you can tolerate, but I want you to make sure that you read 1 book a month during the summer, and then all of a sudden you're up to 9. You can encourage reluctant readers by reading aloud and including those books that you read aloud to them on their reading list. But reading aloud can also get kids hooked on high quality books. So if you read aloud the first 2 chapters or 3 chapters of a book, they may be they may have a better understanding of the characters and the setting and everything, and then be more willing to read the rest of the book on their own. So sometimes if you just read aloud the first two chapters, then the rest of the book will just fall into place afterwards. When you have a reluctant reader, I would encourage you to think about using short books as much as you can. There's plenty of short books on different reading lists that you'll be able to find. So, for example, you'd want to read Call of the Wild, which is set in the outdoors, but not read The Last of the Mohicans, which is about four times as long. And you could encourage your child to read The Red Badge of Courage to get something set in a war setting, but not necessarily War and Peace. To read something about the sea, you'd be looking over the reading list and you'd say, aha, The Old Man and the Sea, that's only about 100 pages, not Moby Dick, which is about 500 pages. Okay, so when you're looking at different reading lists, looking for books that are appropriate for your reluctant reader, try to find books on the reading list for the College Bound that are short. If you need any help choosing them, you know, maybe you automatically know that Call of the Wild is shorter than Last of the Mohicans, but if you don't, then all you have to do is talk to the librarian, because, you know, that's why they get paid the big bucks, is to help folks figure out, you know, what is a good book for kids to read, and they can help you with that even when you're in a high school level to figure out which would be the best. Now, some reluctant readers are reluctant not because they don't like to read. It's just that they're active learners, okay? A couple of things that you can do with really active learners is to find books that have very active main characters. So, for example, Tom Sawyer, in that book, is always getting into tons and tons and tons of trouble, and it's one mischievous thing after another. Whereas a Jane Austen book is mostly about girls sitting around thinking stuff, okay? So that's the difference between finding a book with an active main character. You want to be thinking about what movie genre do they like, because you may be able to find a book in that similar genre. So if they really like, I don't know, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, then maybe that would be a book that they would like to read since they liked it in movie form. Remember that even for active learners, to choose nonfiction is just fine. So if they want to read books about doing things, survival books or building books or electronics books, that's completely fine. And again, ask the librarian, because they will have great ideas. You can also read and watch plays with your active learners. A couple of plays might be the Death of a Salesman is a play, and you can read that in book form. And of course, all the Shakespeare things are play and in book form as well. Some of the things that you can do to encourage reading in general is to make sure that they're reading about specialization, which would be books and magazines or trade journals about their passion, and to take a look at the reading lists for the College Bound. I do have a handout that's available with this course, and on that handout you will have a variety of different reading lists, not just the official reading lists for the College Bound, but also just good homeschool catalogs that have good books in them. So hopefully that will help as well. Okay, now we're going to talk about activity and awards lists and how they become part of your college application. The one thing you want to remember is that you're planning these lists to be prepared, because colleges will often, but not always, ask for it. And the big problem that I have describing this to people is that every college is so very unique, because I can tell you one way to keep your activity and awards list, but each college has such a different, unique way of looking at it, it's impossible for me to tell what format you're going to need it in. So let me show you how that would look. I've gotten a couple of applications here so that you can see what a different application would look like. This is from the Common application, and this is all the information on the Common application. And, you know, you get down to about page 4, and that's when it starts asking you about your the honors classes and different things. And here's the section for extracurricular activities and work experience. Now, that's really interesting because it's very, oh, I'd say mathematical. You know, it has little check boxes and a very short space where you write things in. Look at the information that they ask you. How many hours per week? How many weeks per year? What school year did you do it? Did you do it over summer break? Do you want to do this when you're in college? Did you hold a position? Here it says, do you hold a position or an honor? Do you have an employer? Did you earn a letter? You know, did you letter in baseball or whatever? And so that's kind of intense. When I look at it, I think, wow, that's a really specific format. But not all colleges use the college the common application. So let's check out a different college and see how they want it. This one is from Georgetown University. And on their application, they ask for it this way. Here is list the extracurricular activities you've been involved in the most in order of importance to you. Okay, so they give you a very short space to write the activity. You get to check the year, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, and the approximate time spent, and then you can add any position held or awards. And so that looks pretty different, doesn't it? And they ask for it in a completely different way. They also have a separate place for employment experience or any special talents or skills that you have. And so it's kind of a very different way to ask for it. There's another example here. This one is, let's see, which college did I get this from? Eastern Illinois University. I was just Googling this just to see what, you know, regular colleges want. They have this section that says, tell us more about you, the personal statement. So here is where they want their extracurriculars. Look, it says extracurricular activities, honors, organizations, or employment. Look at how wide open that is. There's like no fill in the bubble, anything, no guidance whatsoever. You just start writing. And then down below, it does have some bubbles to fill out if you're interested in campus activities. But as far as your high school activities, this is what they give you. It's like a blank sheet of paper. And that's why when I'm talking to you about this, I can't really say exactly what format they're going to want it in. It's just, it varies so much from college to college. So the takeaway here is that your job is just to keep as much information as you need so that you're prepared. Okay. So if you just keep a page with details that you think might be needed. And so, you know, I'm a real homeschooler and I try to give it to you the real homeschool way. When I say keep a page with details, mine was a piece of notebook paper. And I would just write on there that they were swim team. You know, later I would go back and I would know because we'd been here for years that it was Normandy Park Swim Club and that they did it for 4 years. But the actual page with details that I kept was just a piece of notebook paper. You can list your activities twice. You know, they have that on the application form, and that's what I just showed you, how each college asks for that information in a different way. But you can also put it briefly on your transcript, and that's one of the pieces that I provide for you on the Homeschooler transcript template is that one little place where you can write down your activities very in a brief way. So you want to give them the information exactly how they want it, but I also recommend that you do keep a minimum amount of detail at least on your transcript because that way these things won't be left unsaid and you won't forget to put it on your application just because they left you a wide open piece of paper. You'll still remember to give them that information. Now, activities and awards, you want to be thinking about activities they did for all 4 years of school. Again, that's how they like that stick-to-itiveness, and they want to see kids that will stick to college for 4 years as well. So when you're listing them, if you can list your four-year activities first, then that will help show that consistent interest over 4 years of high school. And then next in line, if you can list those activities or awards that came with some sort of leadership or award at the end of each one. So maybe they only did swim team for 2 years, but they went to regionals, right? Or they swam a certain team or something like that. So then you'd list that as a specific award at the end of that activity. Because what colleges want to see is that they are rising to a leadership position or that they have received some award within that activity. You can also include activities of a shorter duration. I would just put that at the end. And again, as I mentioned, I was dealing today with one mom who had only activities that had lasted 1 year or less. And we talked about why that was because they were a military family and they had moved 4 times in 4 years. And I told her that that actually shows a real strength in her application. If you leave that unexplained, then perhaps it would look like the child hadn't had a consistent interest over 4 years. But if you explain that by saying, military family, or in your college application essay, the child says, we've been a military family, and in the past 4 years, I've lived in these two different countries and three different states, then that will explain the activity and awards list and make it into a strength showing the uniqueness of that child. When you're thinking about activities and awards, sometimes those activities are actually school subjects. So, for example, theater groups or debate teams. Sometimes activities are not something that you would normally put as a school subject. That might be, if you're training service dogs or you have a lot of volunteer service or something like that. It is a good idea to list volunteer activities. There are some applications, and I don't remember if the three that I showed you had it, but there are some applications that will ask those specific type of questions about whether it was volunteer work or whether it was just an activity or whether it was employment and how many years of volunteer service. So that was not a list that I kept for my own children, which probably demonstrates a weak area in my homeschool, but now that I've applied to schools, I think it would have been helpful had I kept a list of volunteer activities separate from the regular activities and awards list, just so I knew which had been volunteer work. So that's something that you can think about doing. Again, because some applications ask for that list separate, it is helpful, as you saw in the other the online applications, to keep a rough estimate of hours. Maybe they spent, I don't know, 3 hours a week volunteering in the church nursery or something like that. They may ask you for what year the service was done, the volunteer service was done, and usually it's enough to say the year, like 2011 or whatever. Now, again, when you're thinking about the activities and awards, what goes first? The things that were done for all 4 years with an award. Next would be the things that were done for all 4 years without an award. Next would be the most meaningful thing to your child. And next would be things that were done for a shorter duration, or maybe were less meaningful. So I'm going to give you an example of how you might format it on your transcript. This is not a real child, okay? Not a real child. So in this example, you've got choir that was done for 4 years, and the person was a soloist for junior and senior year. They were involved in chess for 4 years, and then they got an award for being the Washington State champion for junior and senior year. Maybe they worked at a think tank, a public policy think tank. Don't laugh, that's actually something one of my children did for freshman and sophomore year. And maybe their article was published, and then maybe they did some dual enrollment at a community college and made the dean's list. So that's an example of how you would format it. Now, one of the things you're going to notice is that sometimes these things get a little confusing to you because they're both activity and they're on the transcript. So let's talk about that just a minute. When it's an activity, maybe you're involved with an organization or a group. So you might do choir or band or orchestra or something. But you can also have that activity be a credit. So I want you to think back to when you were in high school. And when I was in high school, I was involved in choir. Choir was something that was on my transcript every year. It said just choir, one credit every year. And it was also something that was listed as an activity on my transcript. So it was choir, one credit. What activities was the student involved with? Choir and that, this and that and the other thing. Okay. So other examples might be journalism or yearbook. Those were things when I was in high school that were considered both an activity and high school credit. So when you're thinking about doing that with your own homeschool, I want you to think back to those examples and say, if my child had done that in a high school, would they get both activity and high school credit for it? So activities as a class, if you decide that you're going to make it a class, usually that's because it's kind of something academic in nature, like for example, music or something. And you can determine the credit value by counting or estimating hours. If you have about 75 or 90 hours of academics, then you can call it a half a credit. If your child has about 120 hours or more of something in academic in nature, then you might call it a whole credit. It's important to remember that this is where double dipping comes in. You don't want to have any double dipping. And what that means is you don't use the same hours for two different subjects at the same time. So if your child is doing a music class and you want to call it music, if she's doing her voice lessons and piano lessons, you don't want to call it all music and call it piano and call it voice. You want to choose each set of 120 hours has its own high school credit. Okay, so hopefully that makes sense. For awards, that just means that they have some sort of special position or notification or commendation, no matter how small. Sometimes those things are going to be tied into high school credit, like when they're a soloist in the choir, maybe that will be on there. And other times it's going to be completely separate. So if you're filling out, I don't know, scholarships, trying to get some outside scholarships and you're filling out scholarship essays and stuff like that, and maybe they get commended for a scholarship, then you'd put that on the awards. Or if they are commended by the National Merit Scholarship, or if they get the National Merit Scholar semi-finalist, then those are commendations that you'd put on their awards list too. Okay, so let's look at another example. If you have a martial arts enthusiast, for example, what would that look like? Well, on the transcript, it might say PE, martial arts. And that could be something that you put on your transcript every single year. On the activity list, it might say something like this: martial arts, 9, 10, 11, 12, and they earned their black belt in 12th grade. And also, they worked as a martial arts assistant teacher for 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. And then on the volunteer list, it might say something different. Maybe they had they were teaching as the martial arts assistant teacher for grade 9 at the Highline Martial Arts Academy, and they had 100 hours of that. And so that's how you would list that on a separate list for volunteer work. One of the things I wanted to point out is that this book is the one that I found the most helpful. It's Ben Kaplan's book. It's called How to Go to College for Almost for Free. And I actually got a lot of my information about the activity lists from that book. So you might want to check that out from the library or check it out on Amazon. I do have a link to that on my website. It does talk a lot about scholarship strategy. Obviously, that's the focus of the book. And what he does is he tells you how to kind of manipulate the activity list to highlight the strengths of the applicant to get better scholarship money. And he suggests that you provide more detail. He even suggests that that is how public and private high school students can lengthen their transcript to be more than one page by having lots and lots of your high school activities be listed on your transcript so that they get a more thorough review of the student. Because sometimes what happens in the application process is they have so little time to look over each student. Sometimes all they do is they look at the test scores and the transcript. So if you have this activity list like I'm talking about, just that little bit of detail like we mentioned before on the transcript, then sometimes that's the only thing that they're going to know about your child, and that can provide more detail. And of course, more detail is better. It can also help you to keep it organized. And when you are organizing that list of your activities on your transcript, the one key that's important is that you have consistent formatting. So if you say, you know, you always have a colon and then you have a comma between years or whatever, but just make sure it's the same way each time, then that will help. So like, for example, on the previous slide, here where I was listing the martial arts, martial arts 9, 10, 11, 12, hyphen black belt 12. And if you keep that consistent formatting for each of the activities that you're involved with, then that will help. Okay, we ended a little bit early today, but that just means that I have plenty of time for questions. If anybody has questions, please just type that into the question box. Also, when we're all done and the webinar is over, you're going to be given an opportunity to provide comments. And I would love it if you could provide comments at the end of this webinar so I know that it met your needs and anything I could do in the future. Also, if you have any particular topic that you'd like me to discuss in a future webinar, then you can mention that in the comments as well. So I know everybody is snowed in, but if you have any questions, now is your time to ask it. This was a pretty brief presentation, so I don't anticipate a lot of questions. So if you could type something in now, or forever hold your peace, that would be great. I see no questions. Look at me. I have met your needs, and there is nothing that you needed to know. Okay, does anybody else have any more? Okay, there's a question. Ellen says, my girls did some modeling this fall. It was one afternoon. How do I list that? Usually with modeling, there's some sort of organization or publication or purpose at the end of it. And so that is how I would list it. I would tie that in with that. So, for example, if they're modeling with the Nordstrom's fall show or something like that, then you'd put it on there. For example, let's see, if you happen to have them modeling for the Journal of Cosmetic Dentistry, then I would just list that right on there, Modeling Journal of Cosmetic Dentistry. I would probably say what month, so maybe it would be fall 2010, and I would put that right on the activity list. I think that would be just perfect to include. Which brings up an interesting concept. A lot of people do recommend that you include a picture with your college application when possible. So that's something for you to think about. So, okay, somebody else is saying, my reluctant reader likes to read articles on the internet. So do I just list it as article title and author? Wow, that's an interesting concept. I don't really know. It depends on what it is they're reading. I'm right now in my mind, I'm picturing my son, Alex, who does nothing but read the Drudge Report and how there's 8 million articles on that site. And how would you ever know? I think that if there's specific websites that they go to, I think I would be tempted to list those let's see, daily review of history.com, whatever, for the website. I think that probably does not negate the fact that you still have to have a certain number of books in to your child. But it probably does show that he is willing and eager to read on the computer. You know, it's interesting. People that are my age don't often enjoy reading on the computer, but for whatever reason, it seems like the younger kids, they don't mind it at all. And so here's an idea. You could actually get a whole bunch of books downloaded to your computer for free, online books, and he could be reading these great books of literature online for free on the computer, and maybe he'd be a little bit more tolerant that way. So I haven't actually seen how to include different websites per se on the reading list, but I think it would be worth putting it on there just so long as they also have, you know, a minimum number of actual books that you list as well. One thing that you could do, though, is to encourage him by reading different history books and going to the librarian and say, I like to read this, 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 and this online. Do you have any books that you think I would like? And that will help. You know, that is one of the ways that they're trained, is to find books for kids that don't like to read. Okay, any other questions? That was easy. I've decided that means I did a great job. Not that everybody is stuck in the snow. Not that everybody is out making dinner and they just have the webinar going just as background music, but because I explained it just all so well. Okay, if you have any further questions, you can send that to me by email. And thanks for joining us on this webinar today. It was good to see everybody. And I got to give a big shout out to Karen. Stiff upper lip there, kid. You guys are doing great. Okay, I will talk to you next time. Have a great day.